Hey, I'm John Horn. This week on Geffen Playhouse Unscripted, we are joined by
Josh Gad. And as much as he wants you to believe that none of it is scripted, I'm telling you that even my name is in a paper in front of me and I'm reading it. And everything that I'm saying right now, I'm also reading. This is very meta.
And it's phonetically spelled out, so you know how to say Josh Gad.
And for some reason, it's also in Spanish. Yo soy Josh Gad.
It's called Geffen Playhouse Unscripted. You could download it on the Podcast One app.
You can hear it on Apple Podcast.
Or at podcastone.com.
You are done. Thank you very much.
Recorded live at Corolla One Studios with Adam Carolla and board-certified physician and addiction medicine specialist, Dr. Drew Pinsky. You're listening to The Adam and Dr. Drew Show.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on. No choice but to get on. Mandate to get on. Welcome to Adam and Dr. Drewski Show, everybody.
Right on.
Thank you. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend.
Big Bad Drew is back.
Big Bad Drew. Everyone loved Big Bad Drew.
I didn't remember we did that. And all of a sudden, I saw social media taking off with it. I'm like, huh? Oh, oof. I guess we did do that.
Yeah, man. Oh. Having fun.
Oh, there it is.
Every morning at the mine, you could see him arrive. He stood 6 foot six and weighed 245, kind of broad at the shoulder and narrow at the hip. And everybody knew you didn't give no lip to Big Drew.
Big Drew. Big Bad Drew.
All right. When the time comes, that will be the new calling card, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
Should I make some point that is appropriately or significant, right? Or if I say something scary, then we have a new theme song. So.
Yes.
Good times.
All right. What are you thinking about?
I'm thinking about a lot of stuff. Oh, by the way, Maria Bamford's my guest on the Dr. Drew podcast. Do chat on her. I'm a huge fan of hers. She's a very interesting person with a lot of interesting thoughts about psychopathology, her own and others. And so please head on over there to that.
My thoughts with Drew are always about trying to kind of corral reality. Creality.
Ooh.
I find myself almost obsessed with just listening to talk radio or watching the news and seeing everybody just get up there with their sort of rock solid talking points and then have whoever's conducting the interview attempt to, well, essentially what you do is when you talk to somebody and you disagree, you then attempt to paint a scenario that is either going to make them seem disingenuous or seem like they possibly have an agenda,
right?
Or they possibly go, hey, which will never happen in 2017, but oh, I never thought of it that way. That's an interesting point.
I know I do that, but then I'll want to sort of probe their logic a little bit, see if it falls apart.
It doesn't matter anymore. Like I suppose
you're right.
I was watching, well, it's like I think what I'm saying is we discussed it before. David Wilde comes into my podcast. He's outraged by Bill O'Reilly. It's still unclear whether Bill ever touched anybody or not, but he's outraged by his activities. And I'm not condoning that, but surely then you must have equal outrage about David Letterman and what he was doing with his interns. None at all. I find that interesting.
Yeah.
And if you didn't have an agenda, I feel like you'd either be not outraged at all or equally outraged. Because if your only agenda was women's rights, or women's rights, then
you should have some feeling about it.
Right. Yeah. So, I get it. Do you have a political bent? And that's it. But when having civil discussion, unfortunately, you have been sort of checkmated a little bit, or at least to some degree. Yeah. I'm not saying game over. I'm just saying you don't have to pack up and go home. But what I'm saying is when somebody says, when Tucker Carlson is talking to a guy and the guy represents the Bay Area, you know, political action committee. And he's explaining that their judge struck down the sanctuary city thing and the lack of fundings and the funds going from the federal government and all that kind of stuff. And he says, so this is a victory. And by the way, this is perfectly within our rights and it's perfectly fine. And then Tucker Carlson says, all right, well, President Obama said you know, 4 years ago, we need to have bathrooms that are that indicate folks are transgendered. And, you know, Mississippi, if you don't go along with that, you're not getting any money,
yeah,
any federal money.
Right.
You are perfectly fine with that notion.
Right.
Well, this is the exact same thing. So let's be consistent. Would you be all right if Mississippi said, we're not going to do this, and by the way, we're just going to get a judge, and that judge is going to say we do get the money? Would you be as consistent? The guy literally just would never answer.
Just
he would just never answer.
Well, that's what I'm amazed at. When I do, when we're doing radio talk, I'm often interviewing attorneys and things, and their answer, my question is always no. And then they launch into something that's not an answer to my question. I find myself saying, I asked X, you answered Y. Y has nothing to do with X. Now, I'm going to ask the question again. And they'll often do it a couple times. I'll go, thank you. I understand that's your opinion. Answer my question. That you're a lawyer. You know what logic is. You know what a question is. You know what I'm asking. Answer. And if I remember right, the last time I was most out of line, I was talking to somebody about protecting felons. And I said, everyone agrees we don't want to protect felons from the deportation. Yeah, well, we're protecting average citizens who can't call the pediatrician. I go, yeah, I understand. But are you for protecting the felons also? Well, I'm here to protect.
Right.
Should we protect the felons also or not? Yes or no? You really have to ask multiple times.
It is, I'll just assume they're lying because they're smart enough to hear the question.
They're listening and they're preloaded and they have their little points, like you're saying. This call might get us into some of the other stuff I want to talk about.
No, you know what a fun one is? If they ever talk to any of the abortion rights people, and I'm all for abortion. I don't care about abortion. I think I've been pretty clear about that. But if you say to the person, all right, you want to keep it legal, you want this, you want that, Planned Parenthood, this, that, and the other, fine. Personally, when do you think life begins?
Yeah, I know.
I believe all women have the right to choose. I don't know. I get it. But what's your thoughts?
Yeah,
what are your thoughts? You have thoughts? What would you think? I guess if somebody nailed me down, I'd have to come up with some sort of number or some sort of time. You could go 2,000 times and they'll never
answer the question. Let me bridge over to the corralling reality you'd like to do.
Mm-hmm.
And before the mics heated up, you and I were talking about, Gary taking an extendo bachelor party and how we would not know how to ask our bosses for things like that during the week, and right?
Tell me about it. A little clear about it. Not know how to ask our bosses. I've had one modality my entire life, which is when is this thing? I do it all day, every day. There's a car race coming up. When is it? What day is it? And then a pause, and then I go, oh, I can't. I got to work that day. And then moving on, or
yeah, as opposed to, oh, I got to talk to,
or a version. See, there's versions. I did this my whole life and I still do it my whole life, which is what day is it? It's Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Okay. Friday's out. I got to work Friday, Sunday, Saturday, Sunday. I think I can get there.
Mm-hmm.
I might be, what's going on Friday night? Cause if I can catch a flight Friday night after work, then I can get there.
Yeah.
Now the, about the only shaving on that would be is I might say maybe I can get out an hour early on Friday and get over to the airport or whatever it is. But even that would be not a discussion I would have. So I wouldn't not dream of bringing this up with the boss. I would not discuss it because I wouldn't dream of it wouldn't come up to come up.
Well, and then now that we're sort of on our own, we're, you know, I couldn't get away from my practice, you know, because no one else could, you know, I didn't have anybody replace what I was doing. I was sort of where the buck stopped, just the way you are in this business. And so you can't, there's no one to talk to about that. You just can't go.
I get it's a new world order and people work weekends and whatever and the dates and the times and we're not bound to the 9 to 5 whatever anymore. I'm simply saying this. Bachelor parties don't need to be 4 days. They used to be 1 day. And when Max Pata was saying to me, how they get to be 4 days, I said to him, that's when this started. They got 4 days because it could be 4 days.
Right.
No one would ever you'd be insane to say to your boss, I need Thursday off, Friday off for the bachelor party, whatever day off. It would never come up.
Let's hear about these new guys.
It's not, hold on.
Come on now.
It's not doable, right?
No.
It wouldn't be a conversation.
Wouldn't occur to me. That's the thing.
Okay, so, but can I say this?
Yeah.
It wouldn't occur to you X amount of years ago, getting back to our transgendered bathroom, to have a conversation about the rights of transgendered people or gay people getting married or whatever is going on in our society.
So you're saying it's a different time?
I don't say there's nothing wrong with Gary. Gary happens to be 20 years younger than me. That's what's wrong with Gary.
All right, okay.
It's not he stands out amongst...
You're not putting it as a value judgment on him. I got it.
No, he... It's okay. Like putting a value judgment and talking to my kids about gay couples and whatever. It's just, it's a sign of the times. Now, hold on. It will hold you back.
Right. That's what you said.
I'm not making a value judgment.
But that's what you said. He goes, that's why they will fail. You said something like that.
No, they won't. I said to my son the other day.
You said this to me, though, today. You said something like, that's why they won't progress or something.
Well, if you have a motor, you will progress. Mm-hmm. If the whole deal is chillax and enjoy the concert, then you won't.
And you said to your son?
I said, look, super simple. It's super simple. I don't care about college. I don't care about anything else. You are going to go out in the world with a bunch of super soft pussies. All you have to be is a little bit hard and have a little bit of a motor, and you'll conquer. You'll conquer everything.
So, in other words, our entire country has become like a giant radio station.
Mm-hmm.
Explain.
You explain. I'll tell you about proper cloth first. Oh, if you're going to go out, you want to look good. Taking over the corporate world, you want to look good, Sonny.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
I want to hear about this.
Finally, dress shirt that
fits. Wait a minute.
It's hard to find, man. Collar's too tight, sleeves too long. Proper cloth. Create a custom shirt in seconds. Just answer 10 easy questions. I'm guessing about shirt size. It's probably political in there.
No, probably.
That'd be wrong. 500 plus fabric styles made from premium Italian and Japanese fabrics. Starts at just $85, guaranteed to fit, and free remakes if there's a problem. I don't anticipate there being one. Hundreds of five-star reviews, highest rated custom shirt maker on Google.
Wow.
GQ calls them their favorite, and I think they know a little something about men's dress shirts.
Oh my God, I need some shirts.
Easy to use website. Sizes and preferences are saved for your profile, so it's easy to order by phone. Or you can order by phone if you like. They'll save your size, your profile. Start looking your best. Go to propercloth.com/ADS. Enter the code ADS, save $20 off your first custom shirt.
So it'll be $65 for a shirt of your design.
Custom.
And custom fabric and everything.
It's beautiful. I've been to the website. I ordered it. It hasn't come in yet. I just ordered it.
You know what? I'm going.
I'm excited. Right. Proper cloth.
Right now.
Proper cloth. Are you allowed to do the /ADS?
Me?
Well, don't put me.
Why am I not?
Okay. Just saying. Seems like... I guess politicians vote for themselves.
Yeah.
Propercloth.com.
I'm just writing ADS. The website up.
Proper. That's right. All right. Cloth. So, where were we? Yes.
Hold on a second.
So, it's a new world order, Drew.
No, it's me.
That's all.
Here they are. Best dress shirts. Ooh, propercloth.com.
Okay. And it doesn't mean there's anything wrong with anybody because it's a new world order. Do you see what I'm saying?
I do. And what I said was, what I was thinking was, now, you've been complaining about all this antisocial, oppositional defiance stuff in your people that you're attracted to or have in your life. And it occurs to me that a lot of what we're talking about here is the relationship with authority and the relationship with becoming an authority.
Mm-hmm.
Both are things that people with oppositional defiance have real trouble with.
Mm-hmm.
They don't really want to become that authority person because they hate it.
Mm-hmm.
They hate it. And so automatically they're going to be thinking, what can I do to get around this authority? Because authority sucks. That's, antisocial oppositional defiance, as opposed to, hey, that's just to do with a job. How can I, let me just talk to him and figure out how we can get both of our needs met. No, it's an authority, bad. And then I have a bigger sort of thing. I don't know if I mentioned to you last week, but I think it's somewhat of a result of all of our conversations. Which I'm beginning to think, did I talk to you about this, about sort of an archetype that we've been following in this country? I think
no.
I mentioned it, but I
didn't. Well, maybe off the air. No, I don't know if it's on the air.
It's just not a very – it's not yet a really developed notion. I need to study it and think about it more. But I kind of feel like we were in this country a hero archetype into the Second World War, certainly. We sort of thought of ourselves and the country as sort of heroic archetype.
We bail out other people and countries when things are going – when evil is raining down upon them.
If you were to look upon the prevailing psychological archetype that this country had at the time, we take in the international, we take in the poor, we take in the refugees, we go save people. It's sort of a heroic archetype, would you say? Somewhere about 1965, we decided, oh, well, that sucks. We're the anti-hero. We're the not that guy. We're going to make – I remember the student body president was some screw. Everything was a screwball. Everything was some sort of antisocial or sociopath was elevated. Rock stars, those are our heroes.
Right.
Criminals, those are our heroes.
Right.
Godfather. And
right.
So, I think we are still living in that weird archetype of rejecting everything of a authoritative sort of – or authoritarian, certainly. And we're in the kind of the tail end of that. We're sort of burning out on it.
Let me be clear here, because I think I can fix all this in your brain.
Okay.
All right? You ready?
Yeah.
I'm going to make all the dots connect. You listening, Max Pata?
Before you do, do you hear me? Does it make sense what I'm saying? Am I on to something?
You're on. Look, I've said many times, you know, when you say like, you know, it's my thing about these horrible Saturday morning cartoons. They entertain seven-year-olds and or I always say retarded adults, because when they say, oh, he's 44, but he has the mentality of a seven-year-old, then you go, okay, that's severe retardation. All right. I get it. Kids used to be kids, and kids were sort of meant to be seen and not heard. They didn't really get a vote. I mean, they literally didn't get a vote until you became an adult in this country. And we didn't listen to you. We were adults. You were the kids. You were the ones who didn't know anything. And we're going to smoke in the car with you in the back seat. And we're going to listen in to Les Brown and his Band of Renown, not your new pop music, the Archies or whatever it is. We don't listen to that. I'm the adult. I own this car.
Yeah.
This is my car. It's my radio station and my radio. And when you're older, you can get your own car. Listen to what you want. Right now, you listen to what I want. All right. So those were kids.
And what decade are we talking about there? 50s, 60s, 70s?
Historically, it's always been you're the kid, I'm the adult. And it's some...
But it's meant different things. I would argue that was particularly that way in the 50s, 60s, and early 70s.
No, and the 1850s are probably more than that than the 1950s.
Because I think then it was like, hey, man, I'm worried about you need to survive. We're all trying to survive here, that kind of thing.
Well, you know? I mean, it was like, I don't know. They're on a farm, and they told the kid to get up at 6 and go milk something.
Because if you don't, we're not going to, you know.
Yeah. But you're the kid. I'm the adult. I tell you what to do or what not to do, and you don't ever.
And to be fair, again, I'm really trying to refine this. In the 50s, 60s, and 70s, the adult declaring all that was sort of a prick, sort of an asshole.
Yeah.
And that may have been...
It wasn't a prick or an asshole. It was just that was our relationship.
No,
I'm the adult and you're the child.
It was sort of like Mad Men. We were too inflated from the victories of the Second World War or something. We felt too good about ourselves.
Well, maybe there was an element of that. But and either way, there was an adult.
I get it.
There was a child.
But I'm trying to really drill it down because I know where you're going.
Well, if
you
let me fucking finish, then maybe we could get to this.
All right, go ahead.
They had adults, they had children.
Really, children.
And they acted like children, we act like adults. And at some point, we decided to be obsessed with youth. And it could have been, you know, hey, what's the prime demo? 18 to 34, 18 to 30, young, young, young. Hey, you talk to people all the time, and you'll go, oh, the guy's got 5 million viewers, but he's only got 800,000 in the demo.
Yeah.
And you go, what about the demo? They go, that all they care about is the demo. It's all they care about. It's like, 41-year-old dudes don't have money to buy Audis? Like, they just care about the demo. They just care about the demo.
But remember, the demo then was starting to buy records and all these crazy new technologies and things.
But we started focusing on the demo, and then I started noticing it. Some years ago, when it's like just sitting in a sports bar in Detroit, why are we listening to Rihanna?
Yeah.
When did all this come in? Like, we need? Then being old became a put down. You know, we call somebody old. It's like calling them fat or dumb or something, or maybe the
worse.
Old, or worse.
Back then it was. Remember, you were part of the establishment, man.
Yeah. No, I'm saying now. Then the point is we. Turned it to youth, and we started turning everything to youth.
Yep.
Every commercial to youth, all the music to youth. Everything was about accommodating the youth and wanting to know what the fresh, hot 17, 18, 19-year-old pop star wanted. And then we started curtailing society toward the youth. And so when you talk to, what? Just read your thing. What you then?
No. I'm listening.
I keep like looking down and flapping around.
No. It's actually because I'm deep in thought. I'm actually thinking about stuff. Okay. So finish up, please.
All right. Well, I know you get a.
I have a thing when I'm thinking.
All right. Settle. So it was all about youth. Well, youth, they're stupid. This thing is like, oh, I have so much to learn from my kids. Are these blowhard? You should see these blowhard actresses and actors that get up there and it's like, I learned what courage was by looking into the eyes of my 18-month-old daughter. And it's like, you didn't learn shit about courage. I don't learn anything from my kids. I teach them shit. I don't learn lessons from them. When did the kid, thanking the kids? You know, you used to go up, by the way, you'd get an Oscar, you thank God and your agent, and then your wife. But there's nothing talking to your kids, and it's time to go to bed. Kid. Yeah. Okay, what are kids? Kids are selfish little shits that need to be broken of 1,000 bad habits in order to become an adult.
Yeah.
What's Ray? Ray's just a guy who's basically a kid. When you get into adulthood and you take all the things you wanted, not wanted, but your tendencies from being a kid. I told you I played football with Ray when we were 12, and he'd go, all right, you guys kick off to start the first half, and then you guys kick off to start second half. And I'd go, that's not how it works. He'd go, well, that's how I want it. And then you'd go, well, no, and he'd go, I'm not playing. That's the way we're going to. And you'd argue back and forth, and you realize, okay, but when you turn 30, you're not supposed to be having the same discussion because that stuff's supposed to be sort of worked out of you.
And I've told you, I think the lack of a rigorous educational system makes it less likely that the majority will have that worked out of them. You know what I mean? You don't leave it just up to their family of origin.
Men used to become men regardless of the educational system, but the point is, yeah, what's going on the campuses today? I honestly don't want my kids to go to college. I really don't want them to go to college when I see what's going on college campuses. So what happened on college campuses? College campuses is a whole bunch of adults that are there to basically tutor kids for 4 years, but they've decided to let the kids take over.
Right.
So you're there at Berkeley. It's like the kids don't want this guy to speak. Like, I guess he's not speaking. Or the kids are upset.
Yeah.
The school systems used to be, these are the adults, these are the kids. The adults tell the kids what to do, and then they move on.
When did we decide to listen to 18-year-olds about?
I never signed off on it.
So I saw this kind of thing happening probably about 15, 20 years ago, and I asked a patient of mine who was a psychoanalyst and a bit of a historian. I said, have there been periods of history where this kind of thing happens, this sort of youth-centered thing? I'd sort of recognized it quite some time ago. And she said, I don't know if this is true or not. Maybe one of our listeners can straighten us out. But that there is a sort of an anthropological phenomenon after a great victory that a cult of the young male develops.
Mm.
So that's kind of interesting, right?
Yeah. And every 50-year-old guy out there is just wearing some new religion jeans and a tight, stupid T-shirt with a dragon on it. And he's dripping the Just for Men that he's just combed into his hair. Like, the guys, it's our fault for trying to be them.
I know.
Oh, going. I'm down with Drake. No, I love Drake. Adam, what do you mean? I love the pop, rap, music.
You gotta understand something. Our generation created this whole fucking thing.
I'm going to Coachella.
We led the way into this anti-establishment, anti-authority. We were there.
Well, we were
18, 19, 20 when that happened. Now, not me either, but I remember relating to it. I remember when phony was the worst thing you could say about somebody?
Yeah.
And phony just meant somebody with sort of social sort of graces, social sort of decorum.
The reality is 19-year-old dudes don't know anything.
I know that.
We shouldn't be asking them for what their opinions are on anything.
Right. If you want to hear more about this, go to Audible. That's right. Mm. Audible.com. You can download books on any subject, including anthropology and history and all the great things that we've been talking about here. Lewis Black's got a new book, The Rant Is Due. The Rant Is Due. See the turn of phrase?
Mm-hmm. Yes,
new original comic series from Audible Channels.
Yeah.
You can hear the latest episode free right now at audible.com/Lewis Black. That is audible.com/Lewis Black. Lewis Black, one word. The show is written by the fans. He rants about everything, politics, relationship. You know anything about ranting? Anything about that? Mm-hmm. Anything that's driving you?
I would, but we're in a class action lawsuit against the producers right now.
Grinding your gears. You can go ahead and submit your rant to Lewis Black. And if you don't know him, of course, how could you not know Lewis Black? He's regular on The Daily Show. He's the voice of anger in Inside Out and over a million fans on social media. So I urge you to listen to The Rant Is Due free at audible.com/Lewis Black. Black. And while you're there, download some books. Educate yourself. Learn about some of the stuff we're talking about here.
Yeah, man.
Audible.com.
There they go. So anyway, we shouldn't listen to 19-year-olds, but we decided that 19-year-olds had all the answers. And we decided that because we decided that old was bad and young was good. And thus, since there are no qualifications for being 19 other than chronologically being 19, we have a bunch of dopes and we're turning to them to sort of set the trends for society. So we asked the young dope 19-year-old, hey, is it okay if 47-year-old Ann Coulter comes to your campus and speaks? And they go, hell no. And we go, okay, heard you. Sorry. We're going back to our offices now. Where in the past it'd be like, hey, young dope, get the fuck out of the way. The lady.
Young dope.
the lady who has some opinions wants to come share them with anyone who might want to be in the audience. And by the way, if you'd like to go in the audience and raise your hand, be respectful, have a question, have a dialogue, have a debate, we're fine with that. Start chanting or throwing things, then we're going to get you in a choke lock and drag you out. Well, there you go. And look, even the cops are like, we can't really get involved with the 19-year-olds who are burning shit because we don't want to get into trouble.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, guess what that? Guess what 19-year-olds don't have? Boundaries. And you not creating boundaries physically or psychologically means they're just going to keep spreading.
Yeah.
And their demands
will continue. Expand.
Well, not only expand, but they get crazier and crazier.
Yeah.
Like, it used to be, you know, 20, you know, in the year 2000, it's like, hey, David Duke wants to come give out brochures about the Klan. And it's like, we don't like that guy. I guess he does it during the daylight hours. We're going to go down there and protest, but yeah. I guess he can go do it. Right. I guess that's his right. Now it's like, hey, someone wants to fly the American flag at the next young students meeting. Like, no, that's hurt. That's hurt flag. That's hurt flag. We don't want that. We'll have other flags, but not that flag. God. Yeah. By the way, Drew.
I'm just thinking that
let me explain to you. I'm explaining to you.
Go ahead.
It doesn't really have an agenda other than spread out. That's its only agenda. It's the same way I feel about government. Government doesn't want to house the homeless, and it doesn't want to clean up traffic or clean up. It's just all it wants to do is spread out. It just wants more.
To get bigger.
And the way it gets bigger is by saying, hey, I'm going to handle this homeless problem. I'm going to handle this. So we'll start a department of homeless people, and then we'll spread that out. Well, then we got to get some money for some housing, and we're going to add the taxes a little bit. All it wants to do is grow, and all 19-year-olds want to do is spread out.
Yeah.
So it's like, they don't know who Ann Coulter is or what she said or read any of her books. They don't know. They don't care. They just want to spread out. All this problem with, like, the flag everywhere, do you think people really have a problem with the flag, or do you think they're just looking to spread out?
Sends laser beams out of it and harms people. But listen, it occurs to me, though, that be careful what you wish for. I mean, this stuff is getting so bizarre. There's going to be such a backlash. I mean, you know what I mean? You can really start to feel it now. It's like, oh, it's going so far. Any reasonable person is just going to come swinging back.
Well, what the professors and a lot of people on the left aren't understanding is it is up to you to police your own. You can't have Bill O'Reilly and Rush Limbaugh try to police this group. This group has to be, every group has to sort of, look, it's why they take, when they're doing a controversial interview with a black person, they send the black, 60 Minutes sends the black guy. You know what I mean? Like, send in the black cop to get the gangs. You know, it's like you think about the black community. It's like, hey, they have black leaders, they need to police. The guy with the red hair can't come in and start shouting out a bunch of proclamations at the angry black young mob, right? Mm-hmm. This is kind of that. Mm-hmm. Berkeley or whomever or whatever, professors at Berkeley, you're going to have to start policing this group of people who pay you a ton of dough to attend your school. We're not going to be able to do it from over here.
Remember, the sort of tacit message is that these kids are acting out properly. It's really our message they're carrying, and so we're kind of glad to have them. You know,
I heard
carrying the torch.
I heard a professor from a college interviewed the other night, where he was just basically explaining. He wrote some op-ed piece, basically saying that the colleges do have the right to vet these people, and he's basically saying, listen, I'm 100% for pure speech, 100% of the time, 100% of the places.
Except when I decide not.
some of these people, you know what I mean? They don't need to come to the campus. They're not. Well, you got to earn your way onto that campus. You got to. So it's like you're 100% for free speech 100% of the time. It's just we'll have to pass it through your prism so you can decide whether this person's worthy or not. Does that sound like what is that? Does sound a little. Drew, when the hypocrisy gene goes, it all goes. It goes fast. The dignity hypocrisy gene is really what keeps you in line.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah.
I can't sit there.
You should be embarrassed to be hypocritical.
I can't stand in front of you, Nick, hat with a bucket of chicken under my arm and just eating it, tucked around in my gut, slopping over my pants and go, looks like you put on a couple pounds. You let yourself go. Oh, let me have a hit off that Yoo-hoo. Yeah. We can't do that, but we can now.
Here's what you can also do is you can go to True Car now.
We get True Car.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Things are easy. If you feel comfortable that you're getting a fair price, in order to do so, you need context. You need to understand the market. And with True Car, you will see what other people are paying in your area. Chris, I can't see it unless you move it over. Once you register, you will see real pricing on actual inventory so you can feel confident
when
you show up. Durr. True Car users save an average of $3,000 off MSRP. So here's the deal. You get on True Car. You go to True Car. You investigate the car you want. You learn about it. You see that scattergram for the prices paid in your area. You lock in a price. And when you go to one of the over 13,000 True Car certified dealers nationwide, what you've locked in is a price for actual inventory. Something is on that dealer's lot. Over 3 million cars have been sold, new or used. So when you are ready to buy, visit True Car. Again, new or used, visit True Car, and you will enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.
All right. Question. Talk to Nick up there. Yeah. Nick, Chicago.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, man.
How's it going? Honored to talk to you guys. Been a big fan, long time.
Thank you.
All right. I guess I'll start. Due to my job, I'm a firefighter, and before that I was in the military. I kind of have to separate my emotions from everything else, more or less. Otherwise, there's really no way to cope with what you do and see. And that's kind of been leaking into my personal life with my wife. She says I don't show any emotion. And I guess it's hard for me to care when she says she has to do an extra 10 minutes of paperwork at work when I was just working a dead guy, you know, giving him CPR for the last 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Because how can I work on that?
No, you just have to fake it, and you have to realize what they're asking for.
Yeah, I can remember this, too, when I would be seeing, 50 patients in a day that were all extremely difficult and challenging and complex, and then you'd get home, and people would want to complain to you about just something. You're like, in comparison, you almost couldn't even hear what they were talking about. And you have to own that that's you. You know what I mean? You've chosen the career. It's your experience. It's not fair to compare it against somebody else who didn't choose that, wouldn't want that, couldn't handle that. You handle it, feel good about it, but don't do comparing. It's not fair. You know what I mean?
Well, it is fair, but since when did anyone care about fair? I mean, it's not fruitful.
Fair.
It's not fruitful. Well, no, it isn't fair in the sense that, look, you can't, because then someone from Cambodia can go, what are you complaining about doing CPR? At least you're alive. I'm missing a limb, you know, whatever it is. I mean, you could just keep going and going and going with it. What I'm saying is I've, everyone experiences this. I experience it. You experience it. Anyone who's married experience it, because you have a crazy schedule and then you come home and your wife goes, oh God, the guy who was going to do my blowout was late, screwed up my whole day. And you're like, okay. Bite your tongue here.
But you have to try to be empathic. That person is having an experience, and her experience is you need to honor it. You need to have their experience.
Well, no, what you need to do is not break it down to its elements and examine it.
Right.
You had an experience of a hard day trying to save this guy, got in an accident on his motorcycle. She experienced a hard day because her boss raised his voice.
That's right. That's empathy.
And that's her version of a hard day.
Right.
And you had your version
that's
of a hard day.
That's exactly
and
what I'm saying.
And it's not going to serve you at all.
To start comparing and stuff.
Well, all it's going to do is piss you off and piss her off, and you'll never get anywhere.
Right. So resentment's on both sides. Yes.
Pretend like you care.
Now, there's a liability here that he just sort of pushed past, which is how disconnected he is from his emotions generally. And there's a difference between sort of your professional position, you know, and how you operate and how you're able to compartmentalize when you're professionally operating versus how you, when you shut that down a little bit or turn it off, that mechanism, and get back in and in touch with your feelings again. And if she's complaining that you don't have feelings out at home, one of two things. You might be compartmentalized because of post-traumatic stress, and you need to really look at that, and you may just still be uptight from what you experienced during the day. Or number two, you may generally be somebody that's compartmentalized and can't access feeling states, and that's even a potentially more serious thing. Both warrant a little bit of look-see, because that will catch up with you with time.
Okay. Now, speaking of time, LifeLock. You don't have any more time. It's 2017. People are going to go after your identity. I've always said thieves, they're lazy. We always think of them as bad. And I think of them as bad, but I think of them as lazy first and then bad. They just don't want to have the alarm go off at 6 a.m. and have to show up somewhere and give the government X amount of their money and a percentage of their money and this, that, and the other. They'd rather not do it. It's weird, but I look, people that punch people are bad, but people that steal, they're just lazy and they got to make a living. This is how they do it. They steal your identity. And my point is proved, because identity theft is America's fastest growing crime, not stealing a car stereo. It's too much work. It's a calorie burner.
Your point is proved.
They use LifeLock, and you use LifeLock, and you save your identity. I have it. My kids have it. Wife has it. No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions and all business, but LifeLock is the best protection available, and membership starts at just $9.99 a month. It's LifeLock. Drew!
Go to LifeLock.com or call 800-LIFELOCK. Use promo code Adam, that is Adam, A-D-A-M, for 10% off your LifeLock Ultimate Plus membership. 1-800-LIFELOCK. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK.
All right. Thank you very much for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. Thanks for all that stuff. You can go to adamcarolla.com, find out anything you want. Watch my show tonight, 11:30 on Spike. Me and Joel McHale, the nicest guy in the world. Have a lot of fun. It's Adam Carolla and Friends Build Stuff Live. You can check out Lynette. Use the code Hooters at Corolla Drinks. Get $5 off a bottle of wine or per se.
I saw her on Instagram with a bunch of Hooters checks.
Yeah, last week she judged a bikini contest.
It's so funny.
Yeah. All right.
She let you do that. No problem.
No Safe Spaces. Me and Dennis Prager, available on Amazon, iTunes, all that stuff. Drewski.
Please go to Dr. Drew Podcast. Maria Bamford, check it out now. Also go to drdrew.com. Whole family of podcasts. We are getting some very cool and interesting guests and interesting conversation. Me and Spaz. You don't want to miss Weekly Infusion or This Life.
So until next time, I'm Carolla for Dr. Drew saying mahalo.